introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. It is me, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason, and it is the Pocket Protectors Podcast, back here with everyone, the full crew in their new, not so new anymore, but their new digs. Doctor, how's it going? How you been? Boxes unpacked, you all settled in. How's life treating you, my man?
I think boxes unpacked would be a little much, but
still ambitious.
I'm doing well, transitioning okay. I think this will be an interesting day tomorrow, being at the office, getting to watch kind of all the games and having something to do. But yeah, I mean, it's great. I miss you guys. We haven't recorded in a while, so this will be fun.
It's basically been a full month. We basically went and just took all the preseason games off. Just decided we weren't doing that.
We're back now.
No, I guess we didn't want to talk about the predictive value of the preseason stats. We skipped all that and we're back. Luke, my man, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm out a little bit in the sticks right now, at my buddy's place near Lake Arrowhead.
The sticks,
which is outside of the city, but enough to like kind of be up in the mountains and away from the noise. It's very good.
Is it on fire?
Not here specifically.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, let's jump right into it because, you know, it feels like this first question, Eric, I feel like you know what's coming because it's a question I ask you at least maybe 100 times a season. Why do you and the company that you work for, Pro Football Focus, hate our Minnesota Vikings? So the inaugural ELO rankings came out and, you know, I'm scrolling through these things here and, you know, you got the top. Okay. The Eagles. Sure. They won the Super Bowl. Patriots. All right. They were in the Super Bowl. Falcons. We beat the Falcons. Saints. We beat the Saints. Steelers. Okay. All right. Okay. But we keep scrolling. The Rams. We beat the Rams. And then we get to the Vikings. Help me understand.
Well, they don't look as good after Thursday night, right? But like, I think the first five teams you can argue unequivocally have better quarterbacks, right? And I think teams other than the like supporting casts that are in the same conversation, right? So from that perspective, I think it makes a ton of sense. From the perspective of like, okay, the Vikings were a top four team last year, maybe not so much. So that's what I'll say with that. I do think, so if you look at the Rams, quality victories a season ago, the Vikings had a little bit easier schedule. We do regress a team when they change a quarterback. So if you're a bad team, you go up towards the mean. If you are a good team, you kind of go back to the mean. So that was a little bit of something for the Vikings. But ultimately, yeah, we're very high on the NFC South, the Atlanta Falcons specifically, but the New Orleans Saints, I think also, will be a team that I think that that our models will always kind of like, and I think after Thursday night, we're going to get a lot of point spread value week to week on the Falcons.
Yeah, that was not a beautifully played game on Thursday.
No, to say the least.
Not a very aesthetically pleasing game to watch. But as you said, it should open up some value for you if you enjoy the Falcons. I will say, speaking to my friends back in Atlanta, they might be the South's Minnesota Vikings fans because their season, they're going 0-16 now. Just based on even the first half of that game, I was already being sent tweets and text messages that were saying basically they weren't going to win a game. They were the worst team ever. I was like, calm down, guys. Relax.
Yeah, and I think so. Somebody asked me in one of our chats at PFF, like one of our like top guys is a Falcons fan, and he was saying something like, "Can we fight?" Or like, you know, what's the precedent in offensive coordinator? And I was like, "The Vikings fired Jack Burns 2 games into 1993 and replaced him with Brian Billick." That's the earliest I can remember a team like just like straight up like firing their offensive coordinator in a season. So kind of unprecedented. I would say, or as Trump would say, unprecedented.
Anonymous, anonymous,
Anonymous.
Stick to sports, guys.
Sorry, guy. Sorry. I thought we were sticking to spelling. My fault. Pronunciation.
Stick to grammar.
My fault. Okay. Sorry. Luke, so, you know, season starting, jumping in here. When you looked at those power rankings, I know that power rankings, they're very important. They are a very big part of how you form your opinions as a fan.
It's
Were
about
you deeply?
60% power rankings,
Yes, 60% power
40%
rankings.
reading Vikings Twitter.
That and then another 5%, whatever Michael Irvin says in the morning.
No, Mike Golic.
Oh, oof. Okay. All right, Luke, what were your thoughts when you saw the power rankings? They make sense to you? Did you feel like, I mean, Jared Goff, I don't know. I talk a lot of smack about Kirk Cousins. I mean, I feel like he's better than Jared Goff.
I don't think that that's implying he's better than Jared Goff. I do think though that you can. I think that he at plus McVay, I think is part probably the combination that you have to be weary of.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And
I get the except for the Rams, who I think the Rams might have a better supporting cast because theirs is ridiculously stacked. I would probably take every other quarterback on the list of teams above the Vikings. So that's a pretty good reason to put teams above the Vikings. I think if you're mad about what somebody thinks the Saints are better than the Vikings, it's like, yeah, the Saints are really good.
yeah.
It's, and in a power rankings setting, it's not, it's also important to understand that power rankings means, if the Saints played the Vikings, the Saints would be more likely to win, not that they would.
On a
I don't,
neutral field.
yeah, on a neutral field. So add the home field advantage for this year, and yeah, you might get the Saints losing to the Vikings, even though they're technically a better team on paper just by virtue of Drew Brees.
So
It's
Eric, what?
fine.
So one of the things that because I know that fans, we all do this. I know I do this, on occasion and catch myself. But one of the easiest things, one of the, and you hear it everywhere. So I can't really blame, the general fan for doing this because the analysts on TV do this all the time, where they will, talk about the record from last year or use last year's record to define this year's strength of schedule when. I mean, I feel like at this point we know pretty well that just looking backwards at the record doesn't tell you a whole lot about what's going to happen for the next year. So we've talked about it before, but it's a new season. This feels like a good time to talk about it again. I guess, can you help us understand a little bit how you guys go about kind of determining how good a team is as we head into the new year and then how that turns into the rankings?
Yeah, I think so. I do agree with you that if you just use, record, then you're looking at a team like Carolina and thinking that that's a more difficult game than a game against Atlanta, for example. And that's, I think we would say foolhardy. But if you have a metric that's more stable season to season, like PFF ELO or, some sort of efficiency rating, something like that, that's usually what we use. So we'll use something like PFF ELO if we want to be really simple about it. We'll use something like opponent adjusted quarterback grades faced, if we want to be a little bit more specific. But yeah, you don't want to look at you don't want to look at that. I also think that you have to be careful about using like Vegas over unders as much as those can be sharp. A team like the Giants is 7 as their over under, whereas we would handicap them as a little bit lower, right? So you just, I think, probably want to take a holistic approach. I also think strength of schedule should be something that's probably tertiary at best in terms of your analysis of what's going to happen.
Oh,
That
okay.
kind of thing just does a better job of capturing how good the team actually projects to be. Because I think a lot of models would call the Vikings of 2017 a 10-6, 11-5 team that won a couple more games than it was supposed to. So like saying, oh, it's a 13-3 team and therefore they're a 13-3 team going into 2018 is like pretty flawed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that loop. I don't like that because that takes away, you know, my grade A trolling material for Kirk Cousins.
But I mean, like, the guard position is going to cost us at least 3 games this year. So
I mean, at least.
There's no way around that one.
It was amazing. So I was listening to the Purple Podcast with your friend of the network, Matthew Collar, and also a friend of the network, Courtney Cronin. And it's amazing to me that Tom Compton is so bad that he's really made us forget that that Hill is also not good.
Hill's about exactly as good as Tom Compton, I feel like.
Yeah, but
and,
right now
that's a way bigger problem.
We're all like, Tom Compton is terrible. Like, he plays left guard, but like everyone's forgotten that Hill has to start now because Tom Compton is so bad.
Well, and not only that, we've forgotten that the best offensive lineman on the team is average.
Ooh, yeah, that's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I don't. I've said this in the PFF chat, which I think like triggered a lot of like the part-time people and a lot of the like more fan people. Because I swear I am a Vikings fan. I think that I think it's actually pretty easily true that the 2016 Vikings go into the season with a better offensive line situation than the 2018 Vikings do.
Whoa.
I'm trying to think about that.
Yeah.
Do you think Matt Khalil would have been better than Riley Reiff?
That's the thing. So Matt Khalil might not be better than Riley Reiff, but at the same time, like, I think Matt Khalil.
Berger and a good Sullivan.
You had Berger, right? You had Berger at center. You had Fusco, who I think, like, is probably better than Compton at one of the guards. And then And then you also have Rashad Hill, you know, and Andre Smith are about the same player. So I think like when you look at like, you take the interior there, and I think the interior of 2016 is far better than the interior this year. And I think the tackles are not that much different. Matt Khalil was not good, but I also think we overrate Riley Reiff because he is like this like super, you know, valuable, I guess, average left tackle. But at the same time, like, the thing that did the Vikings in 2016 was not bad offensive linemen. It was injuries and bad depth, right? So
yeah,
Khalil gets hurt, Clemmings is your left tackle, Andre Smith gets hurt, Jeremiah Searles is your right tackle, you bring Jake Long off. Like, we're not even there yet, right?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, four games from the corpse of Jake Long, and then you have Jeremiah Searles starting, and TJ. Can we talk a little bit about how TJ Clemmings is still employed in the NFL? What in the world?
That's wild.
I mean, I think it's all the articles back in the day about how athletic he was and all this kind of jazz.
Like, who is picking up project players from 3 years ago that still haven't panned out and going, I can coach him. The hubris is insane.
Is it Tom Cable?
Is it Tom Cable in Oakland?
I don't know.
The thing I appreciated about Tom Cable when I met him was his growth mindset. I don't know if he executes it well, but his appeal to the mental part of the game. I think that there are limitations to sort of like, hey, let's take Draymond Green and have him play left tackle. But I do think like there is something. It was an interesting dude to talk to.
Where is TJ now? Is he in Oakland?
Yeah,
Greenville. It's definitely Tom Cable.
It's
yeah. Per Wikipedia,
that is a super Tom Cable move.
Yeah, per Wikipedia, it's definitely Tom Cable. And if there was anyone who could say, "Hey, there's that athletic dude who doesn't know how to play football," I'm going to turn him into an offensive tackle. That would definitely be something Tom Cable would do.
It's gonna be lit.
Yeah. It poor Derek Carr. But I mean, it's good for Derek Carr. If his offensive line isn't good, then it'll be an excuse for him to have people not be able to say that he's terrible, even though he's statistically Blake Bortles. But that's for another podcast. We can talk about that in another pod.
I have a question for Eric about the line, actually.
Oh.
Because with the interior, and I know that we don't have in PFF Elite right now, we don't have access to the plus-minus grade, so I'm curious about Brett Jones in that regard. Because with the 0 to 100 grades, he's like a top 20 interior lineman from 2017, and he was like top 5 interior lineman in pass blocking efficiency. Does that hold out? Does that bear out in the plus
minus? Yeah, so I'd have I have to look at these right now. I could there's like 18 things running on my computer, but I'm gonna get this done for everybody. Oh, that's college grades. Hold on. We could look at how bad Willie Beavers was in college. So Brett Jones in 2017 by position here, guard, overall.
Or sorry, top four pass blocking grade, not 41st overall grade.
And he was a tackle last year. Or he was a center.
He was a center last year.
Okay. Or sorry, I'm fumbling around here. So Jones was a top three plus minus grade as a center in pass protection. Run blocking, he was a bottom, 30th percentile guy. So
gotcha.
It's kind of like broken up that way. Now, pass protection for a center. So let me give you a little bit in terms of context. So Jones, there's not a ton of variability between like what the guys do in terms of giving up like sacks and stuff. And so, the worst guy in giving up sacks gives up five, the best guy gives up zero. So it's like, there's not, whereas like tackle, it's way different. So there is a decent amount of, there's not a ton of variability there. So you could like flip a couple sacks and go from like best to not, to not best in 1 year. So that's the only caveat I'll give you guys with pass blocking grades from interior players, especially centers.
Yeah. And if he moves over to guard, like, I feel like that becomes a little more important because he'll just be part of fewer double teams.
Mm-hmm.
And makes it a little bit of a higher leverage position. But I also feel like the pass blocking grade for center, like, cause you guys aren't grading, like if there's a botched protection, you don't downgrade the center for that, right?
Correct. Yeah. Like, we cannot in. Right. So our founder, Neil Hornsby, is pretty adamant about this idea. It's, I think center, the way that we do it from an EPA perspective, center is the third most important position on the line, which I do agree with. But I do think that the gap between a center and one of the two tackles is not as big as what we have it. Left guard, as we've said before, is probably the least influential position along the line.
Yeah, and it makes sense. Like, there's no way to possibly capture whose fault it was when, like, somebody blocked the wrong guy or there was a botch. Like, that could be on the quarterback who was supposed to change it. It could be on the center. You'd have to have so much inside info to do it. So it makes sense to just not worry about that. And
there's so many plays that happen in football that you kind of do know, but then there are always going to be those random plays that you don't. Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, you can tell easily, and this kind of goes to the, like, you don't know the calls, that you can always tell easily who a guy was trying to block. And if they were wrong about that, then you don't know. But when they're wrong about that, it's somebody running in freely and you can just kind of handle that. Oh, there was an unblocked pressure and you can input that way.
Yep.
All right. That was good stuff. Well, I feel like we should talk about this football game a little bit here, Minnesota Vikings. And before we get to the game, Eric, how are things with you and George this week? You guys good? You talking? Not talking?
Oh, because he's a 49ers fan and I'm a Vikings fan.
Yeah,
I care almost more about my picks just professionally than I do. And I think I'm in the good position now where if the Vikings cover, that means they're good. And if they don't, that means we're right with our picks. So, I think we deliberate a lot on the pro picks, like which ones to keep in and everything like that. And I think that we came to the conclusion this week that, if the number was six, we probably would have picked a different game. But at 6.5, I do think that the Minnesota the Vikings probably will win this game. But I think in terms of who will keep it, if they'll keep it close or not, I really do think the Niners, because the Vikings defensively are weirdly weak in a couple places that I think the Niners can exploit. Xavier Rhodes has a hamstring injury. It's just one of those things where I think the Niners will keep it close, even without the generational talent first round pick that is Jerick McKinnon.
My heart broke on that news in large part because Jet was awesome. Also, because I had him stashed on every dynasty team everywhere. And let's not get too far off track with that. You said some matchups, some weird matchups, some things that, you know, might be open to being exploited. And that's something that I'm very interested in, because Kyle Shanahan has, generally speaking, had very good success against Mike Zimmer's defenses. And I'm curious, and I know, Luke, we've kind of talked about it a little bit on the timeline, but I guess, Eric, what are you seeing? And then, Luke, just jump in and give your input on where you think the Vikings defense could potentially be vulnerable to this this 49ers attack.
Yeah, I mean, I think I see it with Mackenzie Alexander being out, Mike Hughes being a rookie, having never played really in the slot aside from the preseason, and then Ben Gedeon. I see that like position, I think the Niners do a really good job of having the horses to come in and kind of exploit that. And so then when I'm looking at like a situation the Niners can take advantage of, that's certainly it. And then on the other side of the ball, I think the Niners have the defensive line that's really going to give the Vikings fits, you know, with the Buckners and the Armsteads, and hopefully the Solomon Thomases, if he can become the player I think we had him before, you know, his draft. So, you know, I think that's the thing. I think the Vikings are weak in places where San Francisco could be strong, but of course they're strong in places that San Francisco could be weak. So I think it's just going to be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, I was going to say Ben Gedeon too, because the 49ers, thanks in part to just having Kyle Juszczyk, who can actually like be way more productive out of the fullback position than you usually would expect from a fullback. It allows you to go in 21 personnel more often and then have, you know, more pass plays where they have three linebackers in coverage. And that's a really good thing when you can like pull that off and not screw your own personnel over. And they do that. I think they use 21 personnel the most in the league in 2017. And I feel like that's just something that Kyle Shanahan can use to exploit. But on the other hand, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I would think it's almost an error to not go after the rookie slot corner, even though he's looked good in the preseason and all that. Like, he's still going to be in his first start as a slot corner as a player who didn't do that. And if I'm the opposing coach, I would think about like trying to exploit that as well. They don't really have the wide receiving firepower to really like really exploit a rookie slot corner. But I think that's kind of the decision point, right? Is, okay, do I go with their, you know, base package will linebacker that is definitely like the weakest player and on an otherwise stacked defense, or do I go with the rookie slot corner that is more of an unknown? So I think you're going to see a lot of like I formation and 21 stuff, and hopefully Ben Gedeon can be at least serviceable in coverage. He like wasn't tested at all in his rookie year. He was barely targeted. So he's still kind of, it's either he's bad or an unknown, but it's really hard to say like he's good, even though not getting targeted usually means that you were good. I think it's just a matter of, you know, being the base linebacker and not even being in that many pass plays in the first place.
Happening to face teams that were not efficient a season ago, I think was a big deal, right? So they're facing teams like Baltimore, they're facing teams like Cleveland, they're facing teams that, you know, Gedeon plays 250 snaps and they just happen to be the 250 snaps where the other team runs the ball and he's fine there. I do think that, you know, their other issue defensively, which is not trivial, is, you know, the fact that I don't think that they have a ton of depth on the defensive line that's proven. I think linebacker, we just talked about their third guy, right? So what if they're one of their first two gets injured? And then at cornerback, I think that the same things hold. I think that there are some promising players there, but promising players are different than guys that I, you know, am pretty, you know, stoked if they end up playing, right? Like, so.
In a good spot as a franchise, but if somebody has to go out and like if Holton Hill has to play tomorrow, this is not good.
Right. 2016 was one of those years where guys got injured. And while I think we were happy that the team, you know, drafted Mackenzie Alexander, I think that, you know, we didn't want him on the field kind of thing, you know. So that was kind of one of those sticky wickets that they were in.
Yeah, so Eric, with Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, just taking a glance at the old QB annual, a lot of great stuff in there. And Jimmy G looks really, really, really impressive, but his sample is pretty small. So help me understand When we are looking at, you know, the information, you know, that's in the QB annual, when do, I guess, first off, what are the most important things that we should be looking at? And then when do those sorts of stats start to stabilize for a quarterback?
Yeah, so it's on the order of, you know, 200-300 throws, where you can get, I think, a decent amount of, you know, confidence. But I think you're probably still talking about two or three seasons before you have, you know, you would give the full weight. So what we do with our spread picks is we'll multiply, you know, the value of a guy's grade above replacement level. We'll multiply that by a factor that includes how many snaps he has. So if we didn't do something like that, we would be giving, I think, a full share to the great game Pat Mahomes had in week 17 of 2017, right? So we don't want to do that. But at the same time, like, we don't, there's a threshold too. So after a certain point, we consider all the players sort of full sampled, and we will, you know, give them, you know, all the benefits thereof. So with Garoppolo, to me, I think like the Barnwell piece was an example of sort of trying too hard. Like I don't think anybody who's hot on the Niners this year are not so because they finished 7-0 a season ago. I think people are, you know, pretty happy about the Niners because of how it looked, right? About how Jimmy Garoppolo did. And in that respect, it is a small sample, but the sample is not seven games, right? It's you know, it's all those throws and the throws when he's clean and the throws, you know, that where we can glean a little bit more information. So I would say, you know, we're probably, I think, safe with him. I think if you just took his raw grades as is, you're probably looking at a player who we would rate, you know, pretty favorably, even to some, you know, guys like Roethlisberger and, you know, and we have him down the list just a little bit just because of that, you know, because of sample, we dock him a little bit.
But this is always the kind of thing, but like in the last 2 years, he has 272 snaps. That is a lot more than, like, you know, I think people lump him in the same category as like Pat Mahomes, who had one game. Like 272 snaps is like a pretty solid chunk, and it's not enough to like completely, like set in stone the conclusions that you come to from it, but it's also not so little that you can like just throw it out and be like, oh, you know, the sample will grow and then it'll even out and we'll see a completely different Jimmy Garoppolo. And I think, you know, with small samples too, you see things, you can usually see things like lying in them that tell you, oh, this is lying to us. You know, like I would say like Trevor Siemian's stat line in the first preseason game looks excellent. But then you look inside, you see, oh, there's like this huge screenplay that obviously wasn't really to his credit that like dominates the sample. Okay, cool. That's probably lying to us. Jimmy Garoppolo has nothing in there. In all the ways that, you know, that when, if you just isolated the throws, you would really want to judge quarterbacks by those like high leverage throws. He's, you know, it bears out that he's excellent there. If you just want to take like high leverage situations, like third downs or, you know, crunch time stuff, he's excellent there. Or under pressure, he's still excellent there. So like all the things that you would look at to like find red flags in a small sample to tell you, oh, as this sample goes on, it's going to even out. And then like Jimmy Garoppolo will actually be bad. You know, none of those signs are there. If you expand this sample, it's far more probable that it's just going to bear out to be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair. And my only concern is that, you know, the situation with the Niners is the only, I guess he's had snaps with the Patriots, but it's sort of like it's the only situation that, you know, he's been involved in. And that would give me a little bit of pause. But other than that, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Attaboy, Luke. Absolutely right. That's what I'm talking about. All right, Luke, let's see if you can keep the streak alive. Tell me what the keys are to this game. What do the Vikings need to do to secure the W?
So I think one that we already talked about was Ben Gedeon in the pass game. He's going to be tested. And I think if he can at least prove to be serviceable and not be a liability, I think the rest of the pass defense can kind of cover him up. I think on offense, I'm looking at the non-Diggs and Thielen players. I'm looking at, like, you know, the Treadwells, David Morgan, CJ Ham, the running backs and stuff in the pass game, because I think right now, if you're game planning against the Vikings offense, you're game planning against Diggs, Thielen, and I guess Rudolph. And those are kind
no
of...
No one's game planning against Kyle Rudolph. I mean,
man, the hate is so real.
I, I feel like they're putting a guy on him, but like you're not like game planning to shut down dad running Kyle Rudolph. That seems crazy.
Dad bod.
You're game planning to take away the top three target getters of 2017.
Okay,
I believe that was Dick Thielen and Rudolph. So that leaves, you know, David Morgan, Laquon Treadwell, maybe I think Coley would go if he's going to be like wide receiver four, you know, and the running backs and stuff. And those yak opportunities that they're going to get on like checkdowns or swing passes and stuff, I think there's going to be a lot of leverage on that. And if they can properly execute their responsibilities there, that can turn, you know, 3 yard gains into 9 yard gains. And I think that's a big deal. And I think the other one is just going to be, I think Dalvin Cook is going to matter because I don't think the run blocking is going to be very good. And I think there'll be a lot of leverage on whether or not he can turn unsuccessful plays into successful plays by forcing missed tackles.
It's a lot of pressure on Dalvin. Eric, I guess from your perspective, because that's one of the things that I've actually, you know, seen, and it's something that Dalvin was able to do last season. I guess how stable is something like that where a running back is able to kind of outrun his or just be so skillful that it masks the deficiencies of an otherwise poor run blocking offensive line?
Yeah, well put. I would say that it's your rate of breaking tackles is stable. Your efficiency as a runner is not.
Okay. Rate of breaking tackles. All right. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Is there like any predictability with like, if you look at how like an elusive rating, for example, or some other, you know, similar thing that
right, elusive,
judges that, does that predict like yards after contact or just rushing efficiency in any way?
Not really. I mean, nothing really predicts yards per carry very well other than how good your offensive line is either last season or the coming season, you know, your projection there. That, you know, that's unfortunate, but it's true. Like that elusive rating is pretty stable, you know, for running backs. It's not as stable as yards per route run or something like that. I believe I got to go back and check. But it also doesn't predict, it doesn't predict yards per carry, you know, very much better than yards per carry do. And that's, you know, I thought was an interesting finding for sure. But, you know, I think yards per carry is just one of those things where it's just not a running back's trait, which is interesting and frustrating and all that stuff.
So not to go completely, you know, off on a tangent here, but given that we do know that fairly clearly now is that, you know, the offensive line is more important than the running back. Just quickly, Eric, thoughts on this Le'Veon Bell situation? I know we kind of already talked about the madness that is the Todd Gurley getting all that money, but
David Johnson today got a contract.
Yeah, David Johnson getting the money today. But given that we know that the yards and the stability of getting those yards really doesn't rest with the running back, why do we keep giving these people money?
Well, I, you know, honestly, it's like the thing with Cynthia Freeland's like article about, you know, interior pressure versus exterior pressure. Like when you ask people in the league what they value, they say this, right? And you talk to you read, you know, Doug Peterson, I'm about, you know, a third of the way through his book. You read his book about, you know, sort of what he values, and he very much values a quarterback, you know, running backs, you know, the run game and stopping the run. So regardless of like what we try to say or what is true, right? Like these teams just value those, you know, those traits. And, you know, far be it from me to like sort of, you know, that to try to explain it in any other way, really.
Okay. That's fair. All right. Well, Luke took his first swing. Eric, what else from your perspective? What do we need to do to make sure that the Vikings go in here? Because I mean, the numbers clearly in this case, as much as, you know, PFF hates the Vikings, in this case, you know, there's a pretty wide gap between where PFF rates the Vikings and where they rate the 49ers. The Vikings are clearly a better team in your system. What is it that they need to do to go in there and just take care of business, get this thing wrapped up, and maybe even blow open a big win here? Even though professionally that might not be what you want.
I think what they have to do is they have to put Kirk Cousins in a position to be able to take advantage of the substantial mismatch that they have, between the 49ers secondary and their two wide receivers. I think whether that means, putting play action passes, rolling him out, making multiple tight ends, all the things that make Cousins comfortable. It doesn't bother me anyway, but I do think that what they have to do is make sure that Cousins is comfortable, because I think in Washington a season ago, what you saw was a quarterback who simply was not comfortable and was not, happy with, the situation around him. And we saw, we fantasy players may not have seen the results, but we saw the results certainly in terms of wins and losses, in terms of PFF grade. And so I think, you just have to give Cousins the best platform you can give him possibly. So that to me would be the big takeaway there.
We just know so certainly that Kirk Cousins is good in ideal situations because A, of how stable that is, clean pocket passing and stuff, and B, he's excellent in those metrics. So we just can be so sure of that it's obviously giving him ideal situations as much as possible is going to be the way to win football games all season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we're off to a great start with that offensive line we assembled for him. Should be great. Where Eric said, our best player, the peak of the mountain for us, is average. Definitely not Trent Williams. But, in this first game, hopefully, given the talent of the rest of the squad, it should not matter too much, we hope. Hopefully those nerves that Kirk Cousins showed in his first game in front of the home crowd in the preseason, hopefully he got those jitters out of his system and he's able to come out here and ball. Hopefully he does not say, you vike that, after the team secures the victory.
I'm probably going to mute that phrase.
Yeah, it's got to go. Got to go. It's got to go.
There are so many things that Cousins does that I wouldn't say out him from that as a guy I want to buy into. But that one, when I saw that, I was just like, okay, fade.
Yeah, but, everything he does infuriates me.
I feel again, we're sticking to sports. We're not going into politics, but I feel like Kirk Cousins, people talk about, Hillary Clinton never said anything authentic. Everything felt like it ran through a focus group. That's how I feel like everything he does has been focus group before it happens. All of it, everything, every answer, all of it has been, carefully crafted by the world's greatest PR team.
I can afford it.
Well, yeah, but you like that. That's terrible. Never say that, Kirk. Never, ever do that. Don't say it. Don't do it.
If I see somebody wearing that t-shirt, I'm going to take it off of them.
You're going to have to mock them mercilessly. Yeah. You have no choice. You have to mock them for wearing that shirt.
They go down a whole peg.
Well, that's it. We just wanted to get in here, get back into the swing of things, talk a little bit about this game. Before we get out of here, I know both of you, you've been busy. Eric, other than watching Hawaii games, what else have you been up to? And what is it that we should
The next one starts in 45 minutes.
It's for work, though. It's for work. It's okay.
Just kind of trying to keep up with college now that we have a lot of college content. That's a biggie for us. Helping George while he produces Sunday Night Football, the podcast. Yeah. It's just a big whirlwind trying to develop new tech, new things for, the teams for the coming season. Yeah. It's just pretty exciting times, at PFF. So, been fun.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Luke, my man, what you working on?
Yeah, we got the Purple Journal back up weekly. So that podcast is go check that out on Purple PTSD. We actually have a weekly contest where I give out a bunch of over-unders. And if you pick one of them right and the game right, you get entered in a drawing to win a Vikings gnome. So go check that out.
A gnome?
One of those Vikings garden gnomes.
Oh, I want a Vikings garden. I'm going to have to get in here and win.
Pick some over-unders.
I have a pretty solid streak going right now. Jumped into a Facebook group. with David, who's on, you know, the Climbing the Pocket Network. Hopped in there. Mike Hughes won me a jersey, signed jersey.
Nice.
O'Neal.
Nice.
Yeah, good stuff.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so check that out, and then I'll be writing, you know, weekly, probably recap stuff about the game, but more in depth, you know, like keying on one specific player and like doing either custom charting or using PFF stuff. So keep an eye out for that. My last one was an explanation of why they changed punters, because I cannot resist writing about punters.
You do love punters.
Punter Twitter, it's the hot thing to do right now.
That's
man.
Just
you love punters. You love punters. And Luke, what I would like you to do is I'd like you to do some custom charting. And at the midpoint of the season, I'd like you to send an angry message to Eric because he's stolen your charting.
Yes. Yeah. I'll definitely like chart pressures and then act like that was my idea to do.
Thank you. You should do that.
Yep, you got it. You can count on me.
Then you should send out a tweet saying you work for the NFL Network now.
No, because I'm trying to actually work for the NFL Network.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess you.
Well, they're out here in Culver City.
I guess, yeah, they are up the street from you.
Yeah. I've, every time I see a job that I qualify for, I apply to it.
Boom. Yeah, get us that next gen data, yo.
That would be something. Give me those. I love those, like, play design overhead things. Those just, like, circles moving around that show plays. That is so cool.
Yeah, we need that. All right, well, we made it, gentlemen. Luke, thanks for delaying your plans a little bit for us to come on, get back in the swing, and get out there, enjoy those tacos. Listeners, thanks for sticking with us. Eric, thanks for not really taking a break. I know you're still watching the TV right there, probably five TVs sweating out all these games, but thank you for diverting a bit of your attention to us to talk about, you know, what's going on with the football, the Vikings, and all of that stuff, and yeah. We will be back soon. Y'all have a good one.